Welcome back to the Puma Podcast. I'm Tori.
And I'm Puma.
And on this podcast, we talk about Jesus, life, everything in between. And we're in the middle of our series, The Names of God. And so today we have another name of God, and I'm really excited about this name. So let's dive into it.
All right. Well, our theme verse for this series comes from Psalm 9:10, which says, "Those who know your name will trust in you, for you, Lord, have never forsaken those who seek you." So we've been going over the different names. We're not going to be going through all the names of God that he reveals himself in the Bible, but we've gone through several, and you know, putting them all together, it gives us a fuller picture of who God is. And so those that know God's name will trust him more and more. And so hopefully today, with the name that we're going to look at today, it will help you maybe run to God more and trust him even more than maybe before.
Yeah. Yeah, I know I personally really enjoyed these names, and I know I've heard them before, but even some that I maybe have heard of, I haven't really dove a whole lot into. And so it's really fun for me personally just to reflect about how awesome God is. And even as it's kind of, you know, Easter time, just thinking how Jesus reflects these Old Testament names of God too. It's just super cool. So yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, last time I think we looked at Elohim, and that was from Genesis 1 primarily, and talking about God being the creator God. And Elohim is the plural for God. Elohim, the singular is El. And so often there's like compound names of God, which like El Roy, El Shaddai, or the one we're going to look at today is El Elyon. And so it just, you know, God Most High is what El Elyon means, the Most High God.
El Elyon?
El Elyon. Yeah, El, God, Elyon, you know, Most High.
Most High.
Most High, yeah. Yeah, God Most High. So, Tori, when you think of God Most High, what comes into your head?
You know, that's a good question. I guess I don't really know. I mean, just a God that's above everybody else. I mean, a God that is all-powerful. I think of strength, I think of power, I think of authority. Kind of goes similar to some of the other names you talk to, you know, Elohim, the all-powerful one. I think of a powerful being who is above everybody else.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to separate God's power from right. any of his names.
That's true, yeah.
So, I mean, all the different names of God, kind of like everyone, kind of like a diamond, a multifaceted diamond. I mean, to look at any one side of a diamond, you don't really get a full picture of the beauty of this whole gem. Looking at one name of God tells us about God and something really to marvel and look at, but it really doesn't give us like the full picture. Mm-hmm. I mean, we need, you know, all these, it's like the facets of a diamond. Every name of God just adds another layer to our understanding of God. Mm-hmm. See, God wants us to know him. He knows everything about us, and he wants us to know him. That's why he's given us, you know, the Bible. He's given us his word so that we could get to know him, get to know his heart, get to know who he is as a person, to have a relationship with him. And so the different names of God, like Psalm 9:10 says, those who know your name will trust in you. Trust, foundational to relationship. Mm-hmm. The more we trust God, the more we get to know him, the more we will seek him. And he never promises never to forsake those who seek him, those who want to get to know him. So El Elyon, so where is that found in the Bible? Any ideas?
Old Testament. yeah, probably Genesis, I don't know.
Somewhere in there. Yeah, there's a lot in Genesis. We had talked about Abraham, or when God first called him, his name was Abram, way back in Genesis 12, God, you know, said, hey, you know, I will be your God if you would like a relationship with me, you and your descendants. And so that covenant in Genesis 12, that relationship that God just kind of picked one pagan man out of, you know, all the people, said, I'm going to bless you and bless the world through you. And so going back to Genesis chapter 12, Abraham had a nephew. Remember his name?
Lot,
yeah. So, yeah, Lot, in chapter 13 of Genesis, Lot accumulated a lot of wealth, just like Abram did. Abraham, we'll just call him Abraham. So in Genesis chapter 13, you have Abraham and Lot started to accumulate lots of stuff. And so they, you know, they both were owners of herds and all kinds of, you know, accumulating wealth. And so Abraham says to Lot, you know, this whole land of Canaan that the Lord promised to give me, as far as I could see. I'll let you go ahead and choose whatever territory and land you want. And so Lot looked toward the southern plain, toward Sodom and Gomorrah, and saw that that land was fertile and good for crops. And so that's where he went down to that area, to around Sodom and Gomorrah. So that's chapter 13. Chapter 14 begins, well, lo and behold, there were a lot of other kings. You know, back in that time, it wasn't like countries like we have today, where we have like the United States or Canada or France, like big geographical areas under one domain and one rule. So often they were more city-states. So like every city was kind of its own little city-state, had its own
culture,
own king, its own, you know, in the area right around that city-state. So like the people that lived near there were protected by the king. And so Sodom and Gomorrah, you know, you didn't have like this nation where you had a national army and whatnot. That kind of helps all the difference. So you have individual city-states. And so a lot goes down there to Sodom and Gomorrah and down in that area. And lo and behold, there were some other kings of some other city-states that decided that they were bigger and badder, and so they would kind of invade certain areas. And so that was what was happening. And so what happened there in chapter 14 of Genesis is you have Lot, the area that he's in is overrun by some other kings. And so the king of Sodom and Gomorrah are going out to fight with a coalition of three other kings against another coalition of four kings. And the four kings are stronger than the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah and the coalition of five. And so they basically captured Lot and a bunch of the people and all their goods, these kings, and then they ran off. Well, someone, you know, escaped, and they went and told Abraham, said, "Hey, Abraham, yeah, you know, your nephew Lot, yeah, he got captured by these kings and taken, you know, prisoner and all of his, you know, wealth and whatnot, and along with all the other people. You want to do anything about that?" Abraham's like, "Sure, yeah." So he gets his servants and he gets his group together. He had 318 men that he went chasing after these kings.
Wow.
And basically he went and rescued Lot and rescued, you know, the people, you know, and all their goods and whatnot, and came back. And so, you know, they come back. And so in the middle of chapter 14, you have the king of Sodom and Gomorrah. And you have another king who was the king of a city-state called Salem, or what we would know as Jerusalem. Today. And his name was Melchizedek. And what's interesting is he was a king. He was also a priest. And so when Abraham came back, he's kind of the victor. He kind of rescued everything. And so they're having this little celebration. So Melchizedek comes out and he wants to meet Abraham. And so they have this conversation. And what's interesting in verse 18, it says, "Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was priest of God Most High." He was the priest of El Elyon, God Most High. Now, there's a lot about this that we could talk about. Melchizedek is kind of one of those mysterious people in the Old Testament and the Psalms a little bit, and Hebrews talks about Melchizedek quite a bit. Not really want to focus on him, other than he claims to be a priest of the God Most High, or the Most High God. And it says he blessed Abraham, saying, "Blessed be Abraham," or Abram, "by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth." Remember the last time we talked about Elohim, and that God is the creator God. Here's just another example. And I really would encourage anyone as they read through the Bible, God gets so much mileage out of the fact that he is the creator of all things, which means he's the owner. We are stewards. And you see this all over the place, when often with other names of God. They'll tag it, you know, the creator of the heavens and the earth, or, you know, the one who owns all things, or talk about his sovereignty over that. But he says, "Blessed be Abraham by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth. And blessed be God Most High who delivered your enemies into your hand." Goes down, Abraham says to the king, the king wants to give him some stuff, and Abraham says, "I'm not going to take all your stuff. I'm fine the way I am." And Abraham says, "I have raised my hand to the Lord, Yahweh, God Most High, El Elyon, creator of heaven and earth, and have taken an oath." See, Abraham didn't really know a whole lot about God. I mean, like you and I know all kinds of things about God because we have the Bible and we have all the different names of God.
Yeah, we know what the scripture says about this God, yeah.
Yeah, But one of the things that Abraham understood about God was that he was God Most High. So when we say God Most High, what do we mean by that? Like the God Most High, what do you think?
I mean, it sounds like to me an authority figure. I mean, someone who is above, who outruler, unbeatable, like he is the ultimate God. When I think of Most High, you're comparing, right? So if he is Most High, that means there are others who are under. Otherwise, he's just, I don't want to say high God, or he, you know, there's a, right. a hierarchy of a comparison.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, and can you really compare anything to God? I mean,
yeah, right.
I mean, God is in a category by himself as far as, I mean, can we compare ourselves to God? We do this all the time, by the way. We compare ourselves to God. But the God Most High, he is the Most High of all the gods. But he is a God who has basically all strength and all sovereignty, all power. He high and lofty above. So in a sense, there's God Most High, and then there's everything else.
So yeah, he's his own category.
His own category.
Nothing can really compare. Right.
Yeah. So to think of God as the high and lofty one, or the one that possesses all strength. There's no power or strength that he does not possess. There's no one that can tell God no. There's no one that can say, you know, why don't you sit over here? There's no one that can say, we don't need you now. Your services are no longer
necessary.
It has to do with ruling. So the God Most High, it has to do with the ability to rule and sovereign rule. In other words, there's nothing outside his jurisdiction. One of the things Abraham understood when God came to him and said, I will be your God and you and your sons will be my people, he understood that this was the God Most High, El Elyon. Interestingly, like the gods of Canaan, the Canaanite gods, really had the same weaknesses as their worshipers. Right?
What do you mean by that?
Oh, so like, the people have anxiety or fear, that the different Canaanite gods, they might be strong in their one area, but they're not El Elyon, God Most High. They are subject or sometimes have to give preferential treatment to other gods or jurisdiction away to other deities or, so infighting. We think of like the Greek gods always fighting.
Very insecure.
Right.
Very jealous.
Yeah, the gods of Rome, the Canaanite gods, they all had areas of strength, but also areas of weakness. There were certain areas that the different gods couldn't do. Like there's gods of fertility, but if this isn't your jurisdiction, then get out of the way.
Right. That's true.
So, the god of, the weather, or the god of, the crops, or whatever the area was, and so they shared, the Canaanite gods were powerful, but limited. El Elyon is all powerful without limit. And so God Most High. And so that's how Abraham, thought of God, that he was the Most High God, which is interesting. There's another passage in Isaiah 14, and this is a passage that probably don't think about a whole lot. Isaiah 14, and in Isaiah 14, it's talking about the king of Babylon, and talking about how the king of Babylon, and how he really thinks highly of himself, and really thinks of himself as, all that and more.
Right. And to be fair, the king, he was the emperor of the time. I mean, Babylon was the strongest power.
They ran over other nations and whatnot. But even the king of Babylon had limits. He was not the Most High.
Right. Not the supreme, eternally.
He was not the supreme. As a king, he had sovereignty, but his sovereignty had limits. Human sovereignty had limits. What's interesting is you get to chapter 14, you get to verse 12, and he says, "How you have fallen from heaven, O morning star, son of the dawn." Some commentators think that here in Isaiah, it's kind of picturing Satan as the king of Babylon. We know that in Revelation, Babylon is seen as kind of the prototype for the fallen jurisdiction of the Antichrist and all of that. And so you have those kind of pictures in Revelation. Interestingly, in Latin, when they translated this into Latin, in the Latin Vulgate, They translated "O Morning Star, Lucifer." And so there are some that would see this as sort of describing how Satan fell, or like the king of Babylon as kind of a prototype, or to Satan. That same mentality. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's just Satan itself that he's describing here, or the king of Babylon, but there's a lot of overlap. Basically, one who thinks that they are all that and should be sovereign.
Yeah.
Right. So he says, "You have said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne." There we go again, talking about ruling. "I'll raise my throne above the stars. I will sit enthroned on the mount of the assembly, on the utmost heights of the sacred mountain. I will ascend above the tops of the clouds. I will make myself like a Leon, the Most High." I will make myself like Eleon, the Most High, or El Eleon, God Most High.
Wow.
You know, what is the first sin ever committed?
Yeah, pride.
Pride.
Just wanting, to be like God. And even Lucifer, before the Garden of Eden, you know, he thought he was, cool enough, better enough, powerful enough, that he wanted to be God instead of his creator.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when we think about pride, even for you and I, you know, what is at the heart of pride? We're not talking about being proud of an achievement, but when we think of pride, that we think of ourselves higher or more lofty than we ought. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes that turns into how we treat certain people. If I think that I am all that, then I view other people as less or lower than me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that pride, you know, so the picture of Satan, you know, if this is a picture of Satan, where he is in an exalted position as one who is in the very presence of God, and an angel, a created angel with splendor and value and glory and purpose. And yet in his heart, he wanted to ascend higher than that. He wanted to be El Eleon, which is really interesting to me. Of all the names of God, pick that one? Mm-hmm. He didn't say, "I want to be Yahweh. I don't want to be, you know, Elohim. I don't want to be, you know, all the other names that we talked about." He said, "El Eleon, I want to be the Most High."
Yeah, that's an authority. He wants dominion and power. And yeah, I think that's a good point that he brings up, that Satan wanted to, not just have various characteristics of God's name, but wanted to be greater than God. Like, he wants to be the one that is the Most High. He doesn't want to be the Good Shepherd, right? He doesn't want to be, you know, the Creator.
He doesn't want to be the one that helps heal.
Yeah, right. I mean, of all the other names of God, you know, theoretically Satan or evil dominion Babylon, this being wants the place of God. And this particular name is a placement holder because it is the Most High.
It is the Most High. It's not just high. It's just not privileged. It is the Most High. It is the Supreme. It is the High and Lofty One with all power and all dominion, with all sovereignty, with a right to rule.
Mm-hmm.
See, this is who God is. He is El Eleon. And one of the things that we struggle with is, and even, you know, when we talk about like the gods of Canaan share the same weaknesses as the people, we know that the gods of Canaan were man-made gods, right? Mm-hmm. People made God in their own image.
Right.
Which is why all the gods had the same weaknesses or the same habits or the same problems as the people that worship them. You see, the heart of sinful man is always to make God manageable.
Hmm.
And, you know, we don't want God to be the Most High. We want God to be the most manageable.
Hmm.
We want to have God fit into our categories. We want God to basically agree with our prerogatives. We want God to endorse our ideas.
Right.
We want to manage God. You know, at the very beginning, you know, Abraham is like, "No, I serve God Most High. He's not manageable. He doesn't bend to my will. He is the one that brings me low, not the one that I bring down to me." You know, we want to bring God low to us. We want him to be manageable instead of us seeing him as God Most High. What's interesting is in Isaiah 57:15, you know, one of the things it says there is that God dwells in a high and lofty place, and he invites us, under the right circumstances, to come to him.
Hmm.
You see, it's not that us that we bring God down. It is that God lifts us up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so our picture of God, how big is our God? Is he a God that is manageable? Is it someone that we want to kind of manage and control and bring low? Or do we see him as El Elyon, the God Most High? A lot of that has to do with our pride. You know, the same pride that Satan had, he wanted to be higher than his station. Oftentimes, even in the Christian life, we want to be higher than we are. We feel like we deserve more than we have, or we have rights and not really want to lay them down. This is, again, what's so amazing about Jesus. You know, in Philippians 2, you know, it says, he who being the very nature of God did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself. He humbled himself, self-humbling, and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him a name that is above every name, God Most High, that the name above all name, that the name of Jesus, everyone should bow in heaven and on earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. See, Jesus is the name that is above every name, or he alone has a right to be called El Elyon, the God Most High. And it is not a position that, you know, he fought for. It's not a position that he got through pride. That's a position that is his by right for who he is. And he demonstrated when he came to earth, humility and like lowering himself, which is just amazing to me.
So where's the encouragement? I mean, obviously we see that God is in fact the Most High. He humbled himself. Jesus humbled himself. Yeah, he didn't have to, which is really encouraging to hear. In terms of application, what do we do with this information?
Yeah, when we think about God today, do we think about God as he is, or God as we want him to be? You know, and do I have areas of pride in my heart that I want God to see me greater than I am? I want to be known more for who I am, and I want God to endorse that. There's something about, see, when we humble ourselves, he's the one that lifts us up. But when we have a heart of pride, we don't, you know, a prideful heart doesn't see God as El Elyon. In fact, we kind of rebel against, you know, God Most High, because that means that he has sovereignty over my life. He has rule over my life, dominion over my life. And the heart of sinful man doesn't want to be ruled and have someone else. We want to be the ruler of our own heart. And even in the Christian life, you know, we might give over one part of my life, but there are parts that I still want to have rule and dominion. I want him to be El Elyon in those areas that I can't handle.
That's true.
But in the areas where I feel like I can handle this, I want him to stay out of the way. I want him to be manageable. I want him to be more like me, right, instead of me letting him be who he is.
Yeah, we compartmentalize where God has control and where God is the Most High in our lives. And I think that's a great point you brought up, that, yeah, we want God to be ruler and supreme of things we can't control. But when it comes to things that we enjoy or that we like or that we think we have a good grasp on, we're not very quick to surrender that. And that's interesting.
You know, and so to know that God is El Elyon should cause us to have a humble, contrite heart. And that's what he says in Isaiah 57:15, that those who have a humble and contrite heart are the ones that he lifts up to where he is in a high and lofty place. So where do we want to be? Do we want to be in a place of our own making, or do we want to be a place where we're lifted up to be with El Elyon?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And even many verses like the Psalms, that God is close to the brokenhearted, and he'll never turn away a contrite spirit before him, a repentant spirit. And yeah, humility, that's that won't preach well, but it's a needed. Yeah, you're right. This name of God puts us in our place because it puts God in his place. Right. And that's something to wrestle
see,
with.
See, when we talk about the fear of the Lord is having God in proper place in relationship to ourselves. When we have a proper fear of the Lord, that not a crippling, but the reverent fear of he is in his rightful place, then we are more in the right place where we ought to be. And the best place for us to be is in the right place.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to be in the wrong place.
Right.
So to think correctly about God helps us to begin to think correctly about ourselves and who we are and where we should be.
Mm-hmm.
And really should humble us. And it's a good humbling, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, a good humbling places us right in the grace and mercy of God.
Well, what a thought-provoking name. One that challenges me, you know, where in my life am I not letting Elyon be the Most High, and then trusting that He is, so it's okay to let go and surrender. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, those who know Your name will trust in You, for You, Lord, have never forsaken those who seek You.
Yeah, Psalm 910. That's great. Well, thank you, Puma, and thank you guys for joining us. Yeah, I'm very excited. We have a couple names left in our series of the names of God. So feel free to reach out to us. You can email us at thepumapodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your questions, even thoughts, you know, stuff we can maybe talk about down the road. But yeah, we just love you guys have joined us in this adventure and love learning about God with you guys. So we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.